Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Put your headphones in and ignore your coworkers. 105.7 The Fan.
Beat Haiti 105.7 The Fan. You know, this Turn It Up Tuesday, cracking it up to 12 because that's how loud it goes on our console anyway. Send your song request, plus support text line 410-583-1057. Nolan McGraw's waiting for you. Bob Haiti, Vinny Serrato. Ravens Steelers coming up Sunday, 1 o'clock, Acura Shore. First place on the line in the AFC North. Believe it or not, first division game for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
Ravens have already played, what, four? This will be their fifth one. So, wait a minute, and three. So, this will be their fourth one. But you get the drill. And here to break it down, talk about last week's win against Cincinnati to some level from USA Today. It's the Ravens Wire. Joins us every Tuesday, Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, good morning. What is up?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Pittsburgh's first divisional game of the season. You look, remember last year, Baltimore had all their AFC North road games done by week five. Like, it's crazy to think that this is Pittsburgh's first divisional game, but hopefully Baltimore can start their division record off with a loss.
And look, there's been different layers to the last eight matchups. What's Pittsburgh? 7-1, I believe, against the Ravens in the last eight games. And last year, for instance, not to make excuses, Kevin, Ravens starters didn't play as Pittsburgh needed to win to get into the postseason. Why the Steelers just kind of had their number? Last year was a bunch of drop passes, if I remember, up there at Acrisure. Why has Pittsburgh, as of late, had the Ravens' number here? And with first place on the line, should that be something to be worried about a little bit here starting 1 o'clock there?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, it is something different each and every matchup. But I think to start, it's really the defense that has given Lamar the most problems over the course of his career. And it's a great defense. I mean, it's a well-coached team, and they have a lot of stars on that side of the ball. And Lamar, you know, you mentioned it, 1-7 over those last eight games for the Ravens. Lamar has never played both games for the Ravens in a season against Pittsburgh, whether it be because, you know, you're resting the starters or he got injured or this, that, and the other. But these AFC North road games, they can be these games that are unpredictable, I would say. And, you know, it's tough for Baltimore sometimes. And, you know, Pittsburgh has had their wins. Baltimore has had theirs. But for Lamar, this is an opportunity, I'd say, to kind of start a new chapter against Pittsburgh. I think everybody's going to be talking all week about how, you know, Lamar struggles against Pittsburgh. Lamar does this, Lamar does that. But I think, to me, it's a good defense with a lot of talented players on it. But, again, this is a different Lamar Jackson than we've ever seen. And so I think that, you know, hopefully he'll be able to write another story for him against Pittsburgh, because this one, the one that we've seen from him, obviously the Ravens have not been able to pick up a lot of wins.
Now, Kevin, I mean, I think this is probably the best weapons that he's gone into a game versus the Steelers probably in his career.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think this is the most talent Baltimore has surrounded him with, and he's making the most of his opportunities. And when, you know, we talk about Lamar being a different Lamar this season, part of that is he's spreading the ball around to all of those weapons, where we've talked about it a bunch. It's not the Mark Andrews, you know, is the main pass catcher and that's it. And Zay Flowers is there, or Marquise Brown back in the day. It's everybody's getting involved. And that helps out so many different people and keeps defenses on their toes. You know, Lamar uses the phrase, the team uses the phrase, the pick your poison offense, and it truly is because of the fact that so many guys can beat you and so many guys can get open. And so if Pittsburgh decides to go and try to take Zay Flowers out of the game plan, or they try to take Mark Andrews out of the game plan, or take somebody out, you have a lot of other guys that can go and make a play. I mean, we saw on Thursday night, Tylan Wallace has the big play down the sideline, and you know, Nelson Aguilar has a touchdown. But those are guys that can step up and make a play for you when you need it. And Lamar's given the ball to everybody. So obviously Derrick Henry is also on the team now, and that's a little bit different too. But I think to me, the way that this Ravens offense operates is going to be really key. And plus, Pittsburgh might not have a couple of big defenders. Alex Highsmith almost certainly not playing in this game with his ankle injury that was brutal, but it looks like it was better than it looked, but definitely not going to play this week. And then Dante Jackson, the corner they acquired for Deontay Johnson, who is now in Baltimore, might not play with a hamstring. So two key contributors down for the Steelers, and you know, hopefully Baltimore can take advantage of that.
Now, Kevin, do you think that there's – if you go out to practice today – is there going to be any different starting 11 on defense?
I don't think there are going to be any different starting 11, but I think maybe the way that they work their rotations in might be a little bit different. Obviously, John Harbaugh said there's nothing about, you know, Brandon Stevens moving to safety, and that, you know, and I didn't think they were going to do that anyway.
No.
But I think that Tre'Davious White could play more of a role than expected early. I mean, they need to do something. I mean, we can't just keep having the same conversation week in and week out. And they're trying stuff, and I get it. But, you know, we're sitting here in week 11 now, and this is still one of the worst, if not the worst, pass defenses in so many different categories. And it's not like the Ravens need their pass defense to be this top 10, top 5 unit this season, because the offense as a whole is so good, and the run defense is so good. But the way that this pass defense is playing, you know, there's no way that, you know, you can win a Super Bowl right now. I think that if they're even just below average, you don't even have to be average, just a little below average, I think you can make a run. But they're just giving up play after play, middle of the field, third down, deep intermediate part of the field. It just feels like something has to change here, and it's crazy because, you know, Marlon Humphrey's played well this season. Mm-hmm. Kyle Hamilton's played well this season. Even, you know, guys like Ardarius Washington have stepped up at times. But we know Marcus Williams has regressed. Brandon Stevens has regressed. And I think when those guys get plays made on them, those mistakes are and those plays are loud. And it's kind of contributing. So something has to be fixed here, because the formula as it is right now, the Ravens are winning games. They're 7-3. But in the playoffs, I don't know that that's going to fly.
Yeah, and the thing about it, looking at this game, looking at the Steelers, you know, watching them on Sunday, you know, I don't think that their O-line is very good. I mean, because Najee's only averaging 4.1, and Jaylen Warren's averaging 3.9. So they don't really knock people off the ball. Their center and right guard are two rookies. So, I mean, Madubuike and Travis Jones, if they have their best games this week, they can dominate inside.
Yeah, and they've been dealing with a couple of injuries on that O-line as well. So I agree with you. This is another opportunity. I think Baltimore, in that Cincinnati game, they did what they were supposed to do. Cincinnati's offensive line is not good, and they didn't have Orlando Brown. And so you expect, even though the Ravens pass rush was struggling, you expect them to go out there and have an impact on the game. And Nnamdi Madubuike had 3 sacks, and I thought we saw a lot of moments from a lot of different players there. But in this game, too, you know, Russell Wilson is – back looking not like Seattle Russell Wilson, but I mean, he looks a lot better than he did in Denver. And part of that is because he and George Pickens have established a connection, and he kind of has been able to sit back there at times and make the deep ball throw, that go ahead touchdown to Mike Williams that they brought into the Jets. So they're going to probably want to do a little bit of that against Baltimore's defense, who notoriously doesn't love to give up big plays. You know, you can sit in too high and kind of do your thing. And obviously the status of Kyle Hamilton is going to be big as we move forward into the week. But guys like Adafi Owe, Kyle Van Noy, David Ajabo. Yeah. You know, Yannick Ngakoue is not here anymore. But it's going to be a matter of Ajabo comes in a healthy scratch after 2 weeks and, you know, doesn't really make a huge impact on the game on Thursday night. So who's it going to be that steps up? You mentioned Madubuike and Jones.
Yep.
I think right now those are your two best pass rushers, and you have to kind of treat them as such and hope that they can go and make an impact.
Kevin Ostreicher, USA Today, The Ravens Wire, joins us every Tuesday. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Yes or no, Kevin Ostreicher, when we speak with you next Tuesday morning, will the Ravens be in first place in the AFC North?
I am going to go with yes. I'm going to go yes. I think the Ravens get the job done. You know, the Pittsburgh AFC North matchups are always crazy, always interesting, but I'm going to say Baltimore pulls out a close one and takes over first place in Pittsburgh.
Good job, Homer. Anyway, Ravens are favorite in this game, Kevin. So, on point, no doubt about it. Kevin, enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Ostreicher, it's Vinny at 81.057 The Fan. Whip around. Going on in world sports last night, a ton. Maryland hoops, another impressive win. Another local kid does well. Also, later in the hour, as a matter of fact, Kyler McDaniel, ESPN.com. We'll talk free agency with him, MLB style. Orioles apparently going to be spending some dough. Would be prudent for Mike Elias, given the okay, at least, from David Rubens.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Done.
Vinny and Haney's Whip.
Brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
Time for the whip around here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw is on the other side of the glass. Last night, College Hoops down at the Xfinity Center, a game that you heard here on this radio station. Terps taking on Florida A&M. Maryland off to an impressive 2-0 start. Rodney Rice was on fire against Mount St. Mary's on Friday night. But another local kid flexing his muscles down in College Park last night.
Yeah, Aaron Smith on the top of the key for Maryland. Down low, guess who's wide open? A slam dunk for Julian Reese.
Got a bunch of those on his way to 21 points, 9 boards, 5 for 5 from the foul line, because if Maryland's going to be good, and I still don't know if they will, they have Marquette coming up Friday night, number 15 in the country. But Julian Reese is going to have to start making foul shots because he gets hacked a lot in the paint. And so far, so good in that area. Maryland was up 15 to zip. And to their credit, the Rattlers came back, made it somewhat of a game. But Maryland does pull away 3-0 on the season. So Kevin Willard's team off to a nice start, trying to assimilate all these new people into the equation. Derek Queen, 5 Maryland players had double-digit scoring, including Rodney Rice and Miguel and Derek Queen. So it was a nice, well-rounded win for the Terps. As we mentioned earlier, Maryland did lose their top recruit for the class of 2025. It was Marcus Jackson, who committed early in September. D committed 4 high schools, just transferred to another one. Signing day, I believe, is coming up here shortly. The early signing period for College Hoops.
Just speaking of experience, Bob, if you can, and that kid committed to you, you can't feel good about that.
Nope. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's like Drago from Rocky IV. If he signs, he signs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not holding my breath. I mean, it's great. Get all the local talent. He was teammates with Derek Queen. in the AAU circuit there. But Marcus Jackson, I hate to say it. I mean, I don't know him personally. I'm certainly not going to judge him from that perspective. But highest bidder, sounds like.
Sounds like you got it.
And it looks like Auburn might be up to that challenge. Another Under Armour school. What the hell's going on? Jimmy Patsos with all of this. Maryland football, they lose to Oregon this past Saturday against the number one rated Ducks. Covered the spread, which was 23. Yeah. They hung. The game was actually closer than the 39-18 final score would indicate. But for Maryland, they're 4-5, 1-5 in the Big Ten. They host Rutgers coming up Saturday night at 6 o'clock, College Park. Needless to say, if Maryland wants to go to a bowl game for the fourth straight year, they have to win this game. And they are favored by 5.5.
Yeah. And then who else are they going to beat, Bob?
I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know how they get to 6.
Yeah. I mean, they need a colossal. Penn State, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Iowa?
Iowa's playing pretty good. Well, they lost to UCLA. I watched some of that Friday night.
UCLA? Yeah. Who's not that great?
UCLA's on a heater. They won like 4 in a row, so UCLA's gotten better.
But needless to say, we joke about mayonnaise bowls and such. I mean, there's not even a Miracle Whip bowl for the Terps. But if they beat Rutgers, it puts them in conversation to continue that postseason trend. Colton Cowser, finalist for Rookie of the Year in the American League, third straight year that the Birds have had that. Adley finished second to Julio Rodriguez at 22. Gunner won it last year. And Cowser's the favorite over Austin Wells and Luis Gil from the Yankees. So three straight years. And look, Mike Elias could be under a microscope, rightfully so, this offseason because he has money to spend, or he's been given a green light by David Rubenstein. But you got to admit, I mean, the talent development here is kind of on point. I mean, three straight years, you have a Rookie of the Year finalist. No doubt. I mean, at least praise the guy to some level. It's not like he's the worst GM in the history of baseball. They were the worst team in baseball 3 years ago, and because a lot of his drafting and developing, they're going to be one of the favorites to win the World Series. Maybe bigger favorites if he signs the right free agent, which we'll talk about with Kyler McDaniel coming up here in just a matter of minutes. It's the Whip Around Video at 81.057 The Fan. NBA last night, Rockets beat the Wiz 107-92. Sengun 27-17. Bub Carrington, Baltimore zone 10-2-6. At four steals. Wizards are 2-7, however. Both wins against Atlanta. They go to Seattle. I wish. They go to San Antonio tomorrow to take on the Spurs, who won last night, 116-96 over Sacramento. Victor Wembanyama, 34-14, 6 assists, 3 blocks. Kevin Huerter had a rough night from the field with 2 points. Alex Len, you get the drill. Cleveland, 119-113 over Chicago. Jalen Smith, Mount St. Joe, Baltimore, Maryland. Maryland did not play, was sick. But Donovan Mitchell at 36, however. Cleveland, 12-0. Best start in team history. Even going back to the 70s teams of Bingo Smith, Jim Jones, and then those teams with Mark Price and Brad Daugherty and certainly the LeBron years, 12-0. What's up with that? Oklahoma City, exciting game. 134-128 over the Clippers. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nolan, your favorite player. He had 45, filling stats. Aaron Wiggins, Maryland, had 10. Chet Holmgren out 8 to 10 weeks. Pelvic fracture. Ugh. Bad news in that area. And then real quick, this day in our Ravens history, it's November the 12th. Yes, 2000. Tennessee. You were too young for this, Nolan. But Trent Dilfer, Ravens are driving, throws a pick six to Perry Phoenix, like 2 minutes left. So the Ravens are trailing. Then he comes down and throws a touchdown pass to Patrick Johnson with 25 seconds left. As the Ravens stun the Titans there, they would meet again in the playoffs. But a lot of people MFing old Trent Dilfer on that day.
I'll bet.
Until, you know, it's like Trent Dilfer helped win them a Super Bowl. But, boy, he made some bonehead plays, but he made a boneheaded and great one on the same day. That 2006 against Tennessee. The Ravens were down 26-7. Were you old enough for this one? Nolan McGraw, Steve McNair throws 3 touchdown passes, including the game winner to Derek Mason.
I don't remember this game explicitly, but I remember the painful finish to 06.
The losing of the Colts?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucked. sucked ass, pardon my language. They held the Colts without a touchdown and still lost because they didn't score any. But on this day, they did well. In passages, sadly, in college football, John Robinson, Hall of Fame coach, USC, and took the Rams to a couple championship games.
Yep.
At the NFL level. He passed away at the age of 89, replaced John McKay at USC in the mid-late 70s. And Jerry Faust.
Yeah.
Moeller High School, then took over at Notre Dame and kind of overwhelmed by that prospect there.
His first year was good, you know, then reality kind of
They pulled
in.
A couple upsets there during his time.
And you know what his biggest problem was? Because we followed him going, you know, Jerry got fired and then that's when we went in there. But he would recruit by all those magazines. And, you know, he got a lot of names, but they weren't good players.
They always had, like, top this, top that recruiting.
But they weren't good players, you know, because all you got to do is ask other coaches. How's Notre Dame recruiting? Terrible, you know, not good.
But in fairness to Jerry Faust, as a high school coach, he was one of the greatest of all time.
And Bob, let me just say this about him as a person, because he was at every game. When we were there, he's sitting in the press box every, and biggest cheerleader, fan, nicest guy, you know, had that, hey, Bob Haney, how you do? You know, I mean, he was loud and wanted to shake your hand all the time. He was a super nice guy.
So rest in peace to Jerry Faust and John Robinson. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7. The Fan will come back, talk baseball. Kyla McDaniel, free agency is here. What are the Orioles going to do? Who are the top free agents? And what's all the hubbub with some players that maybe we're not familiar with coming from other lands to make some dough and make some hay in the majors? The general managers meetings last week in San Antonio. Got the winter meetings coming up 3 weeks or so. Try to make sense of it all from ESPN.com. Let's welcome back to the show Kylie McDaniel. Kylie, good morning. What is happening?
It's going great. Actually, I hear you guys talking about Steelers week. I kind of wanted to break out my Baltimore accent, but I feel like that might be offensive to some people.
Eh, I got no problem with it. What do you mean by Baltimore accident? Anyway, who is Roki Sasaki, and why is he such a fascinating, intriguing add to this free agent class? And could the Orioles possibly be involved? Do you need international money? I mean, what are the layers to bringing this guy to the United States?
So the sort of immediate assumption from around baseball is that he'll go to the Dodgers, which is by no means a done deal, but obviously seems like if you had to bet on a place, probably the most likely place. They have the Dodgers have the most international money for the current period. So it ends on December 15th. He hasn't been posted yet, and posting is 45 days. So if they post him like in the next couple of days, which I don't think is likely, I think it'll probably take a few more weeks. Then whoever has money in the current period is important. The Dodgers have the most. Baltimore has the second most. And there is a bit of a thought process that because Sasaki is not necessarily grew up in a big city, loves the spotlight kind of guy, he might choose sort of a second-tier market, not in L.A., you know, New York, Chicago, you know, wherever that might be. So if he comes over in the current signing period over the next, what would it be, like 33 days, Baltimore would be like right squarely in that conversation. The problem is if he waits to be posted until December 15th, so December 15th till January 15th, he can't sign. That's the sort of dead period. And then January 15th starts the new period. That's when everybody's money gets reset and every team has between $5 and $7.5 million. So everybody's on much more equal footing and he can make an extra $5, $6, $7 million just by waiting a few months and doing nothing, ending up with the same team, going through the whole process, getting being able to take his time. So the thought is he's probably going to go into that second period, at which point Baltimore's slight advantage they have right now probably goes away. So exactly how that plays out, what he's looking for, nobody really knows. It was also sort of that thought process when Ohtani was a free agent, but also it was limited by who's going to give him $500+ million. That sort of knocked a bunch of teams out. Now everybody's in play. Like he could go to Tampa Bay, he could go to Cleveland, he could go to Pittsburgh. I mean, I guess supposedly he could go to Oakland or whatever that team's called now. I don't think it's really likely. Baltimore actually has a pretty good pitch. We just don't know what Sasaki is looking for.
No pun intended, of course. Now, he's 23 years old, and reading your column in ESPN a couple of days ago, you have him right behind Juan Soto as the top free agent in this year's class. I had Corbin Burns, for instance. Are we looking at Daisuke Masazaka with the what was that crazy pitch, the gyro ball that didn't really last all that long? Or is he like a Yu Darvish, long-time major league-level performer? What's the upside for him as a pitcher coming over here?
So he's interesting to break down because at this point last year, he was a 21-year-old starter that was dominating Japan, that was sitting, averaging 99 with his fastball, has arguably a top five, top 10 splitter in the world, and had a plus slider and threw a lot of strikes. And the only sort of limitations or negatives were the typical sort of 21-year-old that throws hard stuff, which is, oh, he missed a little time with some arm soreness, but no one's really worried. His command isn't that great, but he does throw a lot of strikes, even though he doesn't always execute well. But his stuff's so good, you don't have to worry about it. And then this year, there's a bunch of different theories floating around. His velo was down a little bit. He was averaging 97 instead of 99. The shape of the fastball was a little bit more hittable, but obviously still 97. Splitter still really good. Slider was playing a little closer to average than it was to plus. Strikes were okay. He's still the same guy. You can also look at some of the data and some of the video and see that he changes delivery a little bit. So the assumption is he also missed time with an unspecified arm injury that sounds like it was shoulder soreness. So there's a little bit of an unknown. I think what he basically needs is a full offseason to get fully healthy and then get his delivery back to where it was, and he'll go back to what he was 2 years ago, in which case that guy's right next to Paul Skenes as the best, you know, under 25 pitcher in baseball, one of the best under 25 pitchers we've seen. I think he probably goes right next to Yamamoto, a guy that just has plus stuff across the board and throws a bunch of strikes. And we just saw Yamamoto as a 25-year-old, 2 years older than Sasaki. I mean, he got over $300 million. And we've seen in baseball, we'll see again with Soto, we saw with Machado and Harper when they were free agents. When guys hit free agency in their mid-20s, they get paid on a completely different scale than when guys hit free agency at 28, 29, 30. And Burns is going to be 30 next season. And that's why his contract, even though he's a proven ace, one of the few in baseball, you're bidding on years 30 through 36. And with Sasaki, you're bidding on years 23 through 28. It's a completely different thing if you're going for that same term of contract. Teams will pay so much more for those years because of the certainty.
Kyler McDaniel, ESPN.com, joining us here, Vinny, at 81057 The Fan, talking about free agency in Major League Baseball, which is here. You got the owners' meetings coming up in just a couple of weeks. Now, David Rubenstein, Orioles owner, has given Mike Elias the go-ahead, Kyler, to spend some dough, which you're well aware of. And now how much, that remains to be seen. What Burns projected at 200 mil, et cetera, et cetera. If you're trying to fill out your roster and take it to the next level, you made the playoffs back-to-back years, trying to get their third straight year. The team you're chasing just came off a World Series appearance. What would be prudent money spent? And how does it, you know, how do you get aggressive enough to not overspend and get crazy time here?
Well, with all the talent that's in the upper minors, Kobe Mayo, Samuel Basayo, some guys even coming behind that, I think letting Santander walk and then letting Kerstad and some of those guys fill in that spot, that feels like what Mike Elias wants to do, is to let all those young players breathe, give them an opportunity, see what they can do, rather than paying retail rate for a guy that's, you know, going to be in his 30s. So I assume Santander, unless it's one of those, you know, his market collapses, he signs a one-year deal. Like, there's certainly scenarios where he could come back. I assume he's out the door. And then all the money, based off of like what he was getting paid, how much the payroll goes up, how many more young players are getting, you know, at the league minimum getting put into the payroll, you would then think all that money then goes toward pitching. And again, I don't feel like Mike Elias is the guy that's going to spend $200 million on a pitcher in his 30s. That's just everything I know about him says he's not going to do that. Again, I'm sure they'll make an offer. I'm sure there is a price at which Burns would come back. I assume he will not, just given the precedent of what has gone on around there. But then when you look at, say, Eflin and Rodriguez, what kind of guys are you trying to add? I would assume it's not going to be the $150 million plus the, you know, the Max Fried, maybe the Jack Flaherty. I think it might be more in, say, the Sean Manaea kind of area, or Kikuchi, where it's maybe an older guy, but you can get him for 3 or 4 years for under $100 million. And then I think when you jump down a little bit lower, you then have the guys that you have an opportunity to get some value on, where Shane Bieber, I think he might sign a 2 or 3 year deal. He's going to miss the first half of the season, but might be a number two starter that's in his 20s. Walker Buehler, I think, sort of found his stride toward the end of the season. I thought he was going to get offered and take the QO from the Dodgers at $21 million and change a year. They didn't offer it. I think he might get 3 years for $50 to $60 million, and he's I think, like the number three starter, like a playoff level starter, the kind of guy Baltimore would want. And I think that'd be a pretty reasonable price. And then I think if you go even lower down, there's some guys like Spencer Turnbull that are maybe in that Ronaldo Lopez area where they go from starter, a guy that hasn't thrown a lot of innings that could turn into one of those guys that gives you reliable innings. If you want to go even into the cheaper, like into the, you know, the bargain basket kind of thing, I think if you take that and then look at all of these seventh and eighth inning type guys and throw them into the mix, I think creating depth, both innings for the regular season and then leverage innings in the postseason, I think adding five or six guys is probably what you want to do, and then just push all those fringe guys off the roster and get as much depth as you can, and then just hope you end up with too much pitching, because we know that when you get to the playoffs, really nobody has too much pitching, even if it might look like that when the season starts.
Hey, Kylie, what do you anticipate like Juan Soto getting? What about Corbin Burns and Santander money-wise and years-wise? What do you think?
Soto, I've written a ton about this. I think what Boris is looking for is he has to clear $500 million. I think he wants to clear the, if you adjust for all the deferred money, Otani's deal is valued at roughly 10 times 47, so 470, it might be 471, something like that. I think he wants to go over 500 and over that 47 per year number. Those are the marks he wants to beat. And then it's just a matter of, well, can he get the 11th, 12th, 13th year? I think my projection is he's going to get 13 times that 47 number, which is 611. I think roughly 600 is what everybody's looking at. I think it's going to land somewhere around there. There's a world where you've got three teams competitively bidding where it goes above that. Or if he wants to go with deferrals and he wants to beat that Otani number and get 700, but then defer a bunch of money. There's also a world where there's only two real intense bidders and they kind of look at each other and say, we're not going to get in a bidding war. We're both going to put a number down and then we're going to walk away and he can pick whichever one he wants. In which case, it probably starts with a five, which would be, I think, a bad outcome considering where the expectations are right now. Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable that that's where it's become. But again, if you look at the history of free agency, the amount of guys that are MVP level position players that hit free agency at 25, 26, 27, it's Juan Soto, it's Bryce Harper, it's Manny Machado, and they all have reset the market. And the market has just really gone northward. And as we've seen with Yamamoto, and I've talked about it with Soto, we're talking about it with Sasaki, the guys that you get the middle of their 20s and you're not bidding on a 30-year-old, teams are getting even more excited to get those guys. Because they get paid close to their market value, because you get one every 5 or 6 years and you get to put them on the front of your season ticket renewals. They're the face of the franchise. They're there forever. If you want to sell the team, it makes it easier to sell. Like, there's all these additional things that create even more value than I think there was. And I think the value of that, say, Pete Alonso, that 31-year-old first base only guy that all of his values with the bat, he could fall off a cliff immediately. Those guys are getting pushed down to where I think the market thinks those guys are, or maybe properly rated now after being overrated for so long.
He's Kylie McDaniel, ESPN.com. Kylie, always appreciate the time. It's going to be fun to watch the flurry of activity, the tons, millions and billions of dollars going to be spent over the next few months. Kylie, enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
There's Kylie McDaniel, everybody. $611 million. Yeah.
Jesus.
He is a Gold Glove finalist, though.
Oh, yeah.
Did he win? I don't think he won, did he?
I hope not.
He better not.
Right.
Everything I know about sports is null and void if he won.
Vinny and Andy, I don't think he did because Kowser didn't win. Kwan won. They already handed him out. What year is this? All right, we'll come back, take a trip to the Funhouse, Nolan McGraw, where it's timeless. There's no passage of time in the Funhouse. It just rolls on in awesomeness forever. And then news from the Nets. John Harbaugh met with the media talking about his team. They're at first place, best offensive football, arguably. I don't think you can question that it's not, right? Defensively, however, we can have an argument there. 12:15, Nate Davis talks some NFL with him from USA Today. Who are the MVP leaders? I guess Lamar is top of the food chain there, but who's his main comp?
Yeah.
Who's coach of the year? Gannon, maybe, in Arizona. Tomlin, I think, deserves consideration in Pittsburgh. Let's be fair.
How about Andy Reid?
9-0, but aren't they favored to win the Super Bowl? I mean, when you're favored to do something and you're doing what you're favored to do, does that make you the coach of the year? I don't know. Harbaugh in San Diego or L.A.?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Among others.
How about Minnesota's?
Yeah, they're hanging. They've lost a little luster since that 5-0 start. But, yes, he would be under consideration to your point. What do you think?
Well, yeah, Minnesota's a good one because especially if they make the playoffs, to do that with, you know, Sam Darnold as your quarterback, losing
starting to suck now.
Yeah, right. He's starting to...
But losing
become
your
Sam Darnold,
your perspective rookie starter. You know, to not have him for the entire year to rally the group and potentially go to the playoffs, I think that'd be a huge feather in his cap to win the award.
What about Raheem Morris in Atlanta, even though they lost a tough game the other day?
They were favored to win it, weren't they,
yes,
in the division?
Yes, they were. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of falls into the higher expectations crowd for me, especially with all the offensive additions.
All right, Nolan, what's your weekend been like? Now, well, what was it like? And here we are. Back at the grind,
yes,
man.
The harsh reality. No, it was great. Yes. It was a good 3-day weekend. Always love a 3-day weekend. Can't go wrong. Spent time with family, friends. A lot of football on Sunday. I tell you what, the bar we were at was distraught during that Steelers and Commanders game, especially when old Farrell decided to jump off sides there. Yeah. Apparently the only guy in the stadium who didn't see that coming. The entire bar was in an uproar as soon as he jumped. We couldn't believe it.
Well, I thought Ertz got the first down anyway.
I did too.
Yeah, I can see why. I'm with you, but it was close. I can see why they made the call they did. I'm not as up in arms about that as I am.
Washington blew a 10-point lead, so there were a lot of different factors in that one. But you know, Washington, they've got Philly, and we'll get to our picks coming up next hour. Philly and Washington, that's going to decide perhaps who wins this division here, because Philadelphia is on kind of a heater, winners of 5 in a row.
Yeah, and Hurts playing maybe the best ball of his career.
Yeah,
might talk about that during buy or sell.
Yes,
out.
He's getting into MVP consideration. We have time for a fun house. Are we tapping out? What do you want to do?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Quick draws, fun house. The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
Question here from this texter says, when it comes to Justin Tucker and the misses, do you think it might have anything to do with the holding? Since the switch in punter and long snapper a few years ago, it seems like Tucker's numbers have been shaky ever since.
I guess like Harb says, you'd have to ask Justin. I don't know. You know, I mean, he was really good before, but I mean, he's got a new snapper and a new holder, and he's older too. So
I'm leaning towards that.
Yeah,
being the problem.
Now, when he made the 60-some yarder in Detroit, the record, that was these guys holding and snapping, wasn't it?
No, I think it was 21.
2021.
Yeah, Sam Cook was the thing, but he's still around.
Isn't
Sam Cook like advising?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That was Cook's last year. In 21. But with the texter was saying, I mean, if anything, Tucker's gotten worse as it's gone along. If it was an issue with the holding or the snapping, you might have seen it in 22, and then you would think it would get a little better last year and then this year, getting the chemistry, but it's gone the opposite direction. That leads me to believe, like you said, that it's in Tucker. It's on him.
Yeah. I mean, the snaps and the holds, they look good.
Text here from Chris says, this coming game will be the one that we truly get to see if the Ravens defense is capable of winning the game. I believe this will be a game where the offense might struggle a little bit. For whatever reason, Lamar has had issues against Pittsburgh throughout his career.
Yeah. Lamar, just because the matchup with Watt, with Rosengarten over there, you know, and whoever else is over there with Rosengarten to help on Watt. You don't leave Watt alone at all. You know, and with Highsmith being out, I think that plays pretty big. So, I mean, if he has time to throw. The other thing, Patrick Queen's been playing a lot better. I think that was his best game for Pittsburgh. And he's starting to kind of get a feel for things. So, Lamar's been on a heater, man. I think Lamar's feeling it.
And it's hard to remember the last time they played Pittsburgh in a game that actually mattered or had high stakes. Certainly not as high as the ones this Sunday. We'll close things out with Howard in Baltimore here, who says, if you really look at Kansas City, they're not that great. They've had several games where it took some fluky plays to win. Of course, the toe being out of bounds in the season opener, the Ravens, the blocked field goal yesterday or over the weekend. I keep hearing people say that they haven't played their best game yet, but I believe that this is their best, the way they're playing now. They just find ways to win. Buffalo may end their lucky win streak here soon.
Yeah, I think Buffalo, I think they're due for the Chiefs. I think they're due to get blown out one game.
Bills are favorite in the game. Coming up Sunday afternoon, only 2.5. But hey, a lot of people think Buffalo's a fraudy kind of team.
Yeah, especially defensive. I mean, you know, I heard Dan Orlovsky say, you know, well, what about the Raven game? And he was like, well, that was a bad game for them. No, they're not physical. That's the problem with Buffalo. They're not physical.
And Joe Flacco was very giving this past week in Indianapolis. It's Vinny at 81057 The Fan. News from the desk coming up next. Going to hear from John Harbaugh talking about his team. Steelers week. Buy or sell. Let's count that dough. Hopefully turn it up Tuesday style at 12:15. Nate Davis, USA Today. We'll talk about the National Football League. Who are the Coach of the Year candidates? We talk about most valuable player. It's got to be Lamar Jackson, at least for now. Jane Daniels is the Rookie of the Year offensively, but who's the Coach of the Year through the first 10 weeks of the NFL season? We'll talk to Nate about that at 12:30.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.